My name is Sam Clements, and welcome to this special mini edition of the Picture House podcast. Today, we are joined by writer and director Robert Rodriguez. That's right, legendary filmmaker Robert Rodriguez has finally appeared on the Picture House podcast. Robert was in town last week to talk about his new film, Alita: Battle Angel, which is produced by James Cameron, and as Robert talks about, originally written by James Cameron, an adaptation of a Japanese manga, was later made into an anime, and now is finally getting the big live-action film treatment. It's a film James Cameron has been wanting to make for a number of years, wrote the screenplay over 10 years ago, but because he's committed to the Avatar sequels and just Avatar itself, Alita was sort of sidelined and the script was just left on a shelf. Robert Rodriguez approached James Cameron and said, you know, I'll just give it a... Let me have a go at it. And here we are. We've got a brand new... visually stunning film. It's so amazing to see on a big screen. As Robert talks about in the intro, it's co-produced in many more ways than one by James Cameron. They also had access to the Avatar special effects crew and some of the artists who do the designs for the film. So it really is sort of a meshing of these two super powerful filmmakers who are so influential. And I think the result is really stunning. So that's in cinemas now. It looks amazing on a big screen. Very good in 3D if there's a 3D screening near you. And it stars Rosa Salazar, Christoph Waltz. It's got Ed Skrein in. It's got this really great cast. And most of them are sort of augmented with these like CGI enhancements because a lot of people play robots and cyborgs and things. I think it's seamless in that respect. And it's a hell of a lot of fun. So without further ado... here's my conversation with Robert Rodriguez about Alita: Battle Angel. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Robert.
Absolutely.
Pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, great to be here.
I started my career as a cinema projectionist, and I remember projecting Planet Terror and Shorts.
And Shorts,
in the
wow.
cinema I worked in.
How funny.
I think I watched most of those movies through the tiny projection booth.
You got to see a big screen.
It was cool. Planet Terror we had on 35mm as well, which is always nice.
Yeah, that's nice. But always strange, too, because I shot it digitally.
Yeah, the distributor in the UK made a big deal about the 35mm prints. I remember that.
That's funny.
And it has become that sort of artifact now. It's like, we're showing it in 35.
Yeah.
But with Alita, I saw that in 3D.
Wow,
and the
great.
3D is incredible.
It's the best 3D you've seen since Avatar, because it's the same team doing it. And it is so much of 3D today is an afterthought. They think about it at the very end of the process. It's just a conversion that they do with a computer. They're not thinking about it. It's just slapped on. It's terrible. But this was done, you know, we had real 3D cameras, Jim's top of the line 3D cameras on set every day. We're tweaking that 3D to give you the depth. So, and it's a totally day and night experience. I mean, you go and you see it and you go, wow, I forgot 3D looks like that. It was just didn't seem worth it past other movies I've seen in 3D. This takes it back to that. Yes, we're trying to tell people, if you remember Avatar, it's like that level of 3D. It's that level of 3D.
Yeah, because you're right. We haven't really seen filmmakers use it in that way for a while.
No, not shooting it. Yeah. The drop down to just like a couple movies a year being shot on 3D. They're all converted now. Mm. Just the lazy version of it.
When you're planning to shoot a film in 3D, like, at what point do you start to think about, you know, this would be good. This scene was going to be great.
Well, what's great is on the set, you're doing it on the set. So you can see it in 3D on the set. You feel the depth of it. People come over and watching the screen after they've been watching on the set and they put on the glasses and they're like, wow, this is amazing. It's going to look so great when it's done. And it's not even any effects in it yet. It feels like you're looking into the world. It pulls you in.
That's pretty cool.
It's actually easier to do it that way, to shoot it, than to try and slap together a conversion later. It's just, it never looks good.
I think often people see, you know, blurry and it's dark, but with this film, it's so crisp, it's so clear. Yeah. All of the amazingly, you know, CGI is, you can see every detail.
Yeah. No, they did amazing work. And that's because you're working with, you know, that was Jim's call. He said, you know, we can go, if you want to talk about it, we can, but I really think we should go with Weta. They're top of the line. They did great stuff with me and Avatar on Apes, and they just hold the bar so high for themselves. Like, I would see a shot they would send me, I would go, that looks great. Yeah, maybe we can adjust like something on the mouth, and they go, oh no, we got 40 other things we have to do. We have to do this, that. They set their own bar so high that even when you're done with a shot yourself, you think it's fine. They're like, nah, they're seeking perfection.
That must be pretty great.
It's great. It's like, wow. Self-starters.
Yeah.
Never get that. I mean, these guys are like such high integrity, artistic integrity. Blows your mind.
Remember when Avatar came out, you know, people were talking, but James was talking about this film. And I saw the anime a long time ago on VHS. And I was like, oh yeah, that's that anime. Okay. I sort of remember that. But then it went quiet with Jim and this film. At what point did it come to you?
Until about 4 years ago. It didn't even come to me. I mean, it kind of was kind of forgotten. Jim had was going to make it after Avatar. I mean, first he was going to make it before Avatar, but then he never quite cracked the script. So he started doing Avatar, and then he always meant to go right back to it. But then Avatar was the biggest movie of all time. So he started concentrating on the sequels, and that's when I came along. Mm. He was showing me excitedly all this stuff he was going to be doing on the Avatars, all the artwork for movie after movie after movie. I was like, oh my God, that's going to take a long time too. When are you ever going to get to Battle Angel? And he said, I don't think I'll ever get to it. And I was like, damn. He said, well, you want to see what I did? Yeah, show me something. I've been waiting all this time. So he let me see the artwork. He gave me the script. And I was blown away. The script was so beyond what I ever could have imagined. It was such a universal story. It wasn't manga, sci-fi, cyborg, limited audience. It was bigger than that. Like his other movies, like that could play around the world.
Absolutely.
And attract all kinds of audiences. So then my trick was, my hat trick was to go and say, let me try and edit it down to length, because it's unshootable right now. It's way too long. It's 186 pages. It's like 66 pages too long.
Oh, wow.
No studio would ever fund it, but I don't know if I can even cut 5 pages out. So don't even pay me. I'll just go see if I can get it down to length. So I went for free. And then if you like it, but you don't think I'm the right guy for it, it's yours. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm not going to charge you anything. You can just go give it to them. It's your movie. So he's like, all right, you can make it. He's like, this script, you did a great job. I can't tell what you even cut. I don't know how you cut 60 pages out. And I did it by just studying his work and knowing that people think of his movies as being big spectacles, which they are, but a great movie is a mix of truth and spectacle. The spectacle is why you go. But it's really the human truth that you take away with you at the end and go, oh, I love that character and that story. And that's what he really had in there. So I didn't touch any of that. He probably thought I was going to cut out the father, or I was going to cut out the relationship with him, or with the boy, cut that down, or all the stuff that he loved, he thought I was going to cut. He said, I played the game with myself. Every time I turned the page, I said, he's going to cut my favorite scene. He had to. How did he get 60 pages out? No, he didn't. I said, I managed to get all the way to the end without you cutting any of my favorite scenes. So you should make the movie.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was fun.
That must...
But I was thinking about what was important to him. It was all the character stuff. Not so much the extra action. I cut some of that stuff out, combined some characters. Clive Lee and Zapan became just Zapan. You know, I combined some things that kind of took longer. I took that down.
Watching the film now, it's not like it's short on any of that human connection. It's not short on spectacle. You know, it is a complete picture.
Thanks.
It must be quite a fun way to come into a project, sort of on a... It's a kind of a whim, isn't it? I'll give it a go and let's just see what happens.
Yeah, that's how sometimes the biggest things happen. It's just like casual. And it's just because I knew him. I've known him for 25 years. We've been friends. And we had talked about making two completely different other projects before.
Oh, wow.
And the last one we almost did was 2003, and I had to go do Sin City instead. So we had kind of talked about it, but still this one was a surprise. I never would have thought this would be the one that we would do. In fact, I never thought we'd even work together at that point, because he was off going to be doing Avatars, and it was just by luck. Yeah, and very casual like that, very like on a whim, you know, because he's like Quentin, you know, they don't go to all the work of writing a script like this that's like that long and that has 600 pages of notes. That's because he was going to direct it. They don't do all that work just to give it to someone else. They'd rather it not get made than get made wrong. You know, they'd rather live with the version they have in their head than see another, get it replaced with a version that's like, not quite what I would do. So the fact that he trusted me enough, because I knew him for so long and because I fixed the script too, that gave him the trust to say, this guy's going to do it. And I told him, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to go make a Robert Rodriguez movie. I want to make a Jim Cameron movie. It's going to feel like you did it. You're going to look at it and go, when was I? I don't even remember being on the set. When did I do this? You know, it should feel that good. Because I didn't want him to look at it at the end of the day and go, oh man, I knew I should have directed it myself. You know, so that was always burning in my head. It's like, I can hear that, or I can hear, wow, Robert, you did a great job. And so the greatest call was like 2 weeks ago. He called me up and said, I thought something was wrong. He was calling me in the middle of the day. I just wanted to tell you, I watched the movie again. He's seen it more times than me. And it's a stunning film. It freaking rocks. And I'm so proud of it. You did such a great job. I was like, wow, this is the call of the century. I never would have predicted this call. It was like the call you dream about. I was always just hoping you wouldn't just like fucking hate it. Because he would do it completely differently. Even though I'm trying to do it like him, I'm sure every decision he made would be different because he's very unpredictable and he's can see around a corner. He's really, I really wanted to see how he made these movies. Because he actually, people say, God, you come from the do-it-yourself background and you're making this big. Well, that's the background he has too. He's from Roger Corman School.
Of course, yeah.
You forget that because he's made such huge movies. So I said, well, how do I make that leap? I want to go learn and see kind of the tricks that he uses to do this. It turns out I didn't learn anything about it. There's no tricks. All I learned was that he's actually just a freaking genius. He can see around a corner. I mean, the guy just knows things other people don't. And it's not because he's got a method or a process. He's just that guy. You know, it's like a Spielberg or a Cameron. Those guys are like, you'll never be those guys. No matter how much you study, not even if you get the devil's phone number, you'll be that guy. So it's like, it's pretty amazing when you meet people like that.
And in terms of your sort of the working practice, did you just go off and shoot it yourself, or was Jim involved at all in the shooting?
He wanted me to make it my own, and I kept saying, no, but I want to make it like your movies. No, make it like your movies. So I also didn't want to burden him with me, like always like bothering him, because he had to do the Avatar movies. You know, he wasn't looking to make another. He was already making three other movies with these Avatars. He doesn't need another movie. So I knew I had to take this off his plate. Make it like a fun thing. And sure enough, he would come play hooky with us. I knew he'd be so buried under the script writing on Avatar that I could send him some little questions and he would get all into it and want to see stuff and get excited. Or while I was on set, I would send him photographs from the set that Photoshop to look like the final image. Because I know he would have wanted to be there. Mm. And so I wanted him to have the feeling of seeing it come to life. He'd be like, oh my God, he looks so much like Ito, you know, Kristoff in that costume. I said, look at this. That's right out of the graphic novel, right out of my dreams, you know. So he got the experience of being on the movie, but he stayed away. He only came and visited once. But I could send him long questions, you know, a question, and he would send back huge answers. So he was always made himself available when needed.
This film is so beautiful to look at. Like, yeah. Everything about it, the background, the costumes, the characters, it's incredible. Where do you start with that bit of the process here in terms of realizing this really fantastic work?
You know, it just takes it's step by step. And one of the biggest helpers was, I was just lucky, you know, I got the movie greenlit really quickly. In fact, he was shocked himself. He said, I don't remember the last time I've gotten a movie actually greenlit where the studio says, all right, here you go, make it. Because like on Titanic and on Avatar, they never said they were officially making it. They just stopped complaining after a little while. You know, there was how much money they were spending. They were always threatening to pull the plug. And then after a while, they stopped threatening. So we thought, oh, I guess we're greenlit. He said, they just gave us the go and go, go, go. And when they gave us the go, 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 it was perfect because he had to restructure all the Avatar scripts. Like three has to be part of four. I have to split them in half. So all his art team was just sitting around.
Oh, wow.
And so for 2 months, I had them. His art team, which I couldn't even hire if I wanted to because they're all under contract by him. Mm. You can't get those guys. They're on a full contract for the whole making of the Avatars. So you get these really awesome artists who wanted to take a break from the blue guys for a while and do this. And they had a blast. They came in and cranked out amazing designs for the look of the film. And a lot of our sets and stuff were built right out of their paintings they did, which were really stunning and amazing. And my costume, it was a mix of my crew and his crew. So a lot of my crew and then the stuff that was beyond my crew's capabilities, his crew. Mm. When Jim would come down to my Troublemaker Studios in Austin, I had a sign that said Lightstorm Southwest. And when I went to Lightstorm, he put up a sign that said Troublemaker Northwest. Like we're extensions of the same family, you know, and it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. Like shooting this in your studios, is this the biggest thing you've taken on? Was that a challenge for you?
Oh yeah, by far. It was cool to see that my studio was able to handle that many people. There were so many people in this crew. It was up to like 1,000 people at some point.
Wow.
And we built even the Hall of Iron City, like 90,000 square feet of Iron City in my parking lot. And we built it with steel structures so that it could last. So it's still up. It's the biggest standing set in all of the United States. because most sets get torn down after a movie. This will last like 15 years. So you can go up to my studio, you can come walk around Iron City and go like, wow.
Take some pictures.
It's really cool. Yeah, the pictures are fantastic. But it was fun to make stuff right there in my home base.
As well as it, you know, looking incredible, you've got such a great cast in this film. How did you find your Alita?
I was lucky, you know. Me and Jim talked about that. We're like, okay, well, now we got to go cast this girl. We can't even, it's not like she exists. You know, it's not like somebody we can go, oh, it's the girl from that TV show. She's perfect. You know, we had to go through a whole casting process. We hadn't seen her before. And it's happened a few times with me in movies where the right person just walks in the door. And it floors you when that happens, when you realize, oh my God, this person would be perfect for this role. That doesn't always happen, you know, and it happened on this for such an important character, for the main character. I was just pinching myself, you know, so lucky. She walked in, she did the scene, really affected me. I sent a clip to Jim that night, said, I know we got more girls to see, but if we had to shoot the movie tomorrow, this would be the girl. And he wrote back, I don't see why we even need to look anymore, that's the one. Like, he was in total agreement. So, you know, my casting instincts are usually pretty good, but it really helps when, you know, Jim signs off on it too, then you know that's how he would have gone too. So that's cool.
It's nice having that, someone you can bounce ideas off and like, just reaffirm, especially, you know, what
especially him, you know, of all people, Jim is going to have very strong opinions about anything. So for him to be like in total agreement, it's great.
It's quite a big role to take on, Alita, because it's so physical as well as the emotional parts and the journey she goes on, like both physically and you know, just as a personality. It's really mind-blowing, you know?
It all came from that script. I saw that script and just thought it was fantastic. I mean, he really cracked it. He just needed some help, but not a lot. And, you know, like, I really loved the father-daughter story. You know, I had some of my own convictions. He had another version afterwards that cut out the whole hunter-warrior thing with the dad. But then I argued, I said, no, I liked your version of the script, because he worked with another writer for that version. I said, I like your version of the script better. I think you got to keep him as a hunter warrior. Otherwise, he turns into Geppetto.
Yeah.
And he's just a nag, you know, like, don't do this, don't do that. And kids, because I have kids, after a certain age, like by 10 already, they don't freaking need you anymore. So if you don't become their mentor, you're obsolete. You know, you're just a nag at that point. And you're just somebody for them to rebel against at some point. So I like that she's like, you're a hunter warrior, you're cool. I want to be like you. That's cool. That's what you dream about as a parent. That's the relationship you want. I think that's an important relationship. I think it's fine to have a father-daughter love story and the love story between her and the boy. You know, he probably thought I would probably cut one of those down, but I thought they were both kind of essential.
It feels a bit more like relatable, you know.
Yeah, people have those relationships. They have all those relationships are important in juggling relationships. And it was all about the theme of her. She's a bullet fired from a gun. I mean, she's a warrior. That's all she knew. That's all she was trained with. She didn't have a family or anything. So for her to wake up with amnesia was a gift to experience life differently. She gets a family. She gets a father who cares about her. She has a boyfriend. She has this world that she loves and she sees with such innocent eyes. She can't, once she knows she's a warrior, she can't go back to being how she was. She's going to take this all in and become a better person. And so she needed to have all these different experiences.
I think the hunter warrior bit's great. It's a really exciting idea having all those bounty hunters there.
Yeah.
But Christoph Waltz's costume as well is so good. It's like, it reminded me a bit of like Van Helsing with the hat and the coat.
it's how it is in the graphic novel. It just looks better on him than it does. The guy in the graphic novel looks a little nerdy. And Christoph doesn't look like a reedy scientist. He looks badass. He looks like he'd go out and kick your ass. He looks like an avenging dad. You know, yeah. He really does look like he's going to go take it out on people and use his scientific brain to give him an advantage with this, you know, weapon that he's designed.
It's quite iconic, I think, seeing him with that, I don't even know what you'd call it, but
the rocket hammer.
Rocket hammer.
The rocket hammer, so yeah. I kept the design the same. I said, if we can make it fly, it'd be cool to have it look like the one in the graphic novel because it's so iconic.
Like part of the narrative, how there's no guns allowed and it is all that sort of close quarter combat. Mm-hmm. That must be quite fun to work with as a filmmaker, you know, different ways to make that, get it bigger and bigger and bigger to the climax.
Yeah, to stage all that stuff, it was fun. It was fun to design the movie and have that much time to really get stuff right. You know, really was what's nice about that the effects took longer because it gave us time to really hone the movie down.
the bar brawl. Another film with a bar brawl. But that's really impressive. You've got so many people and they're all, you know, augmented, like robot people with lots of visual effects.
Yeah.
How long did that take to shoot?
It took a lot. There's much more footage for that. I went ahead and overshot it because I thought I'm not going to be able to fit it all in, but I don't want to leave anything on the table because I was suddenly under pressure to make it really great because it was already a great scene in the graphic novel. There's a shot where she kicks people out the door and they're just a ball of people. Like that's how many, and it was like, okay, that shows we're not going to do that, but that's how many people she's beat up. And then Jim had written a big 10 to 12 page scene in there. And not all of it's fighting. A lot of it's the dialogue building up. A lot of it's the build up and the joke that, you know, a little girl walks into a bar, clears out the bar.
Yeah.
So that's already going to be a fun scene. But I looked up, I was worried about how am I going to stage this thing? There's so many people and how do I even wrap my head around it? So I looked up on YouTube, top 10 bar fights. I called Jim super excited. I said, I looked up top 10 bar fights. You know what? 4 of the 10 are ours. Terminator, Terminator 2, Desperado, and Dust Till Dawn. They had in the top 10. We got to make this better than the other one. So I added more action and it doesn't show everything she did, but almost. I figured, God, so I was under pressure to top ourselves because I go, this has got to beat our, I guess that's just what we do. We're the bar fight guys. We got to make this better. If it's both of us teaming up, joining forces, it's got to trump all those, you know.
It's definitely the most spectacular and it's probably the most expensive bar fight that's ever been shot.
well, yeah, just because her as a special effect alone, every shot with her is expensive, yeah.
I love those sort of like post-apocalyptic type films where everybody's joined together by a sport. And I think the sport in this at the center of this is so great.
Yeah. The sport and Jim figured out a way to put Motorball in here because Motorball is a part of the other graphic novels, not the first two, which is primarily what the story for. But he said, you know, we got to appeal to more than just the manga crowd and the people who are fans of this. And we're going to have a really small movie. But manga fans would be really pissed if they see an Alita movie and there's no Motorball. So I had to figure out Motorball in there somewhere. But he put it in the coolest way. They're not even playing Motorball. They're playing Deathball.
Yeah.
They're all trying to kill her, which makes the stakes much higher. When I first read the script, I was jumping out of my seat going, oh my God, this is so... Because you cared about her so much. You were suddenly really worried for her. And I thought, Jim's genius, and this made me want to make the film, was that you cared that much about her that I was jumping up out of my seat, so excited that they're all going for her now. And it's like, it's not, they're not playing the sport, scoring points, but she's still going for the ball.
Yeah.
Because she wants to use it as a weapon. So it's like, so cool. That's the magic of how he works these things in.
The ball's got a really good sound when it hits the ground. Like that thing's going
to
hurt.
Yeah, I say make it really heavy. When she catches it, I even drew for them how to do it. I had to draw it out. It knocks her back. I mean, it's so heavy. And when she's dragging it around, it's got to hang down like she's got ape arms. That's how heavy this thing's got to be. So you're like impressed that this little girl's carrying this huge thing that she then uses to kind of like catapult at them and knock them senseless. So yeah, it was very fun.
I think it's in a film like this where you've got an amazing character at the heart of it who, like, she's so badass at the beginning. She can do anything.
Right.
But the, like, Motorball and all of that stuff, it sort of helps raise the stakes. Like, she's great in a fight with one person.
Yeah.
Fine. She's great in a bar brawl. Okay, that's good. She's great against a big guy. And now she's great at speed on a race, playing a game.
Well, all these guys, she doesn't even know the sport like they do. And they're all just trying to kill. They got rockets and all kinds of stuff. They're ripping her helmet off. And she's still taking them out.
Hell of a lot of fun. I should say, I loved watching this in a big screen with the audience I was watching it with. Have you seen it with many audiences?
No, I haven't seen it with an audience at all. In fact, I haven't even seen it completely finished.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, Vida was still fixing stuff. And tonight's going to be the first time I see it all the way through with everything in. So I'm so excited. I was excited to wait for London to watch it way through for the first time, finished. And my wife hasn't seen any of it. I've been saving it for, this is her, she's going to see it for the first time tonight. So I'm like, I hope she likes it. That took a long time.
Oh, well, thank you so much for talking to us, Robert. That was great. Look forward to playing this in our cinemas.
Thanks. Cool. Appreciate it.